Hello, this is Daryl Bigger, speaking to you from Walla Walla University. One of the series of discussions about this quarter's lessons, Bible study guides, on the Bible and human emotions. This week's subject is the subject of guilt. My discussion partners are Julian Melgosa, who authored these study guides, as well as a companion book with them, and Larry Viverka. Larry is a pastoral counselor, a longtime member of the theology faculty who does some relief hospital chaplaincy now. This subject of guilt was so interesting, gentlemen, that just between sessions here, we couldn't stop talking about it. Mm. Guilt, because there are some in this world who want us to feel guilty. I don't know if any of you have grown up or been around people who wanted to impose guilt on you. And we in contemporary society get the impression that others think guilt is always inappropriate. In fact, Julian, I would encourage you to talk a little bit about contemporary psychological views of guilt and what part that plays in our human experience.
Well, I was mentioning before that possibly from the non-faith mental health professional, there is a tendency to say, get rid of your guilt. Maybe your religion is imposing that on you. Just be free. And that is something that we have to work together. Obviously, that I think is a wrong approach. Even for a non-believer therapist, I think a reasonable therapist, regardless of whether he or she has faith or not, should be someone that if someone has violated one of their own principles and values, it should be encouraging them to restitute, to restore, to take care of that in the way it should be, backwards. There are, in fact, cases that there is guilt and there is no reason to be. We find children that feel guilty because their parents have divorced. We have survivors of a catastrophe that feel guilty because the others died and he didn't.
Yes.
That is a psychological problem that needs attention and treatment. And initially, that kind of thing, it was what triggered me to include, guilt as a lesson here. However, from the biblical perspective, we have to realize how bad guilt is when it's a result of a transgression of the biblical principles that you have embraced. And that's, when we have biblical examples of how guilt is experienced. And guilt is a very painful experience, whether it is founded or unfounded, neurotic or real. It is a very painful one that the Lord does not want us to experience. And that's why he has provided ways.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I heard an illustration once of the difference between the two types of guilt. That is when you're driving down the highway and you are trying to make time to get somewhere quickly, and you exceed the speed limit, and then you happen to look in your rearview mirror and you see the Merry Christmas lights, flashing behind. With an officer speedily approaching. And as he approaches, you slow down, obviously, to go off the shoulder of the road, which is the appropriate response. But as he approaches, he speeds on by. And one kind of guilt would be to be relieved of the fact that you haven't been arrested for speeding. But the other kind of guilt, this sort of genuine guilt for transgression, would have you chase the officer down, pull him over, and say, I deserve a ticket for my speeding. Please write me up so that I can be assuaged of my guilty conscience.
Oh, dear, you're reminding me.
False guilt versus genuine guilt.
Yeah. Mm. And the battle within ourselves you're reminding me of. You talk about some guilt being appropriate and some inappropriate. By whose standard do we classify those two categories? I was rushing to an appointment, which I've forgotten. I forget what it was right now, but I was rushing and very late and very concerned about it for some reason. And I intentionally exceeded the speed limit more than the little grace which I believe that the signs allow in this country, rushing past the speed limit, and I came to a stop sign. There was nobody in sight, no cars at the intersection, but my inner sense would not allow me to go through the stop sign without stopping. I could exceed the speed limit, but I couldn't disobey the stop sign.
Not even a California stop.
No. So it was an illogical, irrational choice on my part. So how do we decide what the standards are to determine what's appropriate and what's inappropriate?
One of the things that we know is that there are guilt is a personality trait. We can be measured as having been prone to guilt or less prone to guilt. That you know, there are a number of clinical tests that will give you a score on that, and that complicates matters more. But I think that no matter how intense your guilt is, if it's a result of the transgression to your embraced principles and values, the Lord provides the forgiveness. And I think we humans endure in the fact that we can measure guilt and we can, you know, have the person classified. But from the biblical perspective, it doesn't matter. You may have 70% or 30% of guilt. You may hurt more or less for what you have done. But forgiveness is ready there for you. And that, I think, is the most beautiful part of the Bible promise.
Yes.
Good transition to, so you feel guilty. What do you do about that? How does one deal with the notion of guilt?
Again, dealing with the two different types of guilt, if you have that pervasive sense that I'm bad, that you ask the person, well, what have you done that is so bad that you're feeling this terrible sense of guilt for? And the person has no referent. There's nothing to point to. I just feel like I'm a bad person. As opposed to the other kind of guilt in which one has done a wrong and one's conscience is saying, stop doing that wrong, confess that wrong, and make it right as best you can, and then reform, stop doing that wrong. Those two things require very different processes. The one is fairly clearly spelled out, it seems to me, in our Christian understanding of how we deal with sin. On the other one, I think we have to try to undo, it seems to me, a lot of damage and early training that's happened in the person's life, in which the sense of where the wrong resides is nowhere to be found except in them.
Yeah. Yeah, that shame is so much ingrained in them that they take responsibility for things they had no determining factor to perpetuate. Forgiveness. God forgives us, you say. Has God already forgiven us ahead of time, or does God wait until we confess and ask to be forgiven to forgive us?
And what is unforgivable?
Let's come to the unforgivable first. Do you see things as unforgivable, Larry?
Well, my definition of that which is unforgivable is that which one refuses to be forgiven for. And how can I forgive something for which a person does not want forgiveness, seek forgiveness, and boldly disdains forgiveness? That's unforgivable, it seems to me.
Yeah. And that, I think, is what the Lord calls the sin against the Holy Spirit. Is that the sin of moving away from God and refusing to accept that forgiveness. That's the one thing that cannot be forgiven, because there is no bridge there. There is no possibility. Other than that, back to your question, I think the Lord is willing to forgive anything, no matter how great transgression must have been.
But let's say, for example, that even though I have confessed my sin repeatedly over and over and over to God. I feel horribly mortified and sad and despondent about this. And I read that God has forgiven me, but I still feel guilty. Does that mean I've committed the unpardonable sin, the unforgivable sin?
No. No, because a person who's I would say, committing, not committed, is committing that which is unforgivable, has no interest in owning behavior or things that are wrong, and therefore it's not an issue.
Mm-hmm. See, I think I agree with you that the issue with the unforgivable sin is that I don't want to change my life, and I don't feel regret for that. Once I feel regret and sad and want to make a change, then my challenge is to practice being a faithful believer, to trust what God tells me in spite of my own sense mm-hmm. of whether or not I've been forgiven.
I think that is a very good way to put it.
Yeah.
The question I have, further question I have, is whether or not, and it pertains to your question, Darrell, and that is whether forgiveness is a transaction. Uh-huh. In other words, for forgiveness to be complete, mm-hmm. one must seek forgiveness and then be the recipient of forgiveness.
Yes.
Between two parties. Now, God forgave the whole human race at the cross in yeah. that sense, in one sense. But the other forgiveness, the unforgivable sin would say there's an incomplete transaction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you raise the discussion in that question also of whether we confess individual acts or thoughts mm. of behavior that are the sin, or is sin the whole state of who we are as human beings, separated and fallen from God?
And I think it's both.
Yes.
I think it's both.
Yes, I agree. And the way in which we deal with that, do those two categories differ from one another? I would say yes, Larry, that you've pointed in that direction. Because Jesus at the cross firmly put the final point on human forgiveness for who we are, and is individually willing to respond to our own needs as those occasions arise, to implement that in our lives. Well,
yeah, well,
we're out of time. Thanks, Larry Viverka, Julian Malvosa. This is Darrell Bigger from Walla Walla University for The Good Word.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.